Shita Padakaman Shivan Vaishnavascha Shri Rupam Sarvajatam Sarvana Raghunatham Vijayam Samsudhi Sarvajatam Sarvajatam Vijayam Saikam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Vidam Sarvana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vijayam Sucha. So again, it's August 18, 2010 in the Slovenian Yatra. And we're doing a series of four seminars on service. So we're going to look today at material service and what's wrong with it. Today is going to be a negative class. Then tomorrow we're going to look at serving the devotees, the six loving exchanges, how to be discriminating, look a little bit at Kanistha Majjhima and Uttama. Then the next day, we're going to look at how to serve the devotees without offense. Look at the first offense on chanting, offending the devotees, how instead to regard the devotees. And the last day, we're going to look specifically at the relationship between guru and disciple. Today also we're going to really divide the class into two parts, in a sense. How we end up serving the senses and how to control the senses and the mind. So one of the first things we learn in the Hare Krishna movement is that all of us have an essential dharma. We were speaking this morning about the fact that we have different natures in this world. But really, no matter what nature we have, all of us are servants. We're all servants. Just like you can have gulab jamuns, rasgullas, cake, what else? Sweet rice, cookies, all different kinds of cookies. Cookies with cream in the middle, cookies with jam on top, cookies with sprinkles on them, different color cookies, different kinds of cake. And they're all different. But yet they all have sugar. That sugar, they're useless. When I was in Lithuania, they were serving us desserts without sugar. What's the point? When I had one student whose mother used to always want to cook healthy food, and he loved eating outside the house because at home he never got any sugar. Sweet without sugar. So the essential dharma, no matter what our nature is, whether we're cautious people or risk-taking people, or whether we motivate ourselves more positively or negatively, whatever, we're all serving. Another word for serving is giving. We're all givers. And we can understand that the happiness of giving is greater than the happiness of taking. Maya tells us, you should be served. You should be taking. But that doesn't really satisfy us. It's quite interesting. If you have 100 euros and you spend it on yourself, you'll not get as much satisfaction as if you spend that on someone that you love or on helping someone in some way. It's much more satisfying. You have that experience? You give a gift to somebody or even your time. If you spend your time, because giving is not just money, if you spend your time doing something for someone else or doing something for a higher cause, this is, of course, the principle behind volunteer work. Why do people work as volunteers without money? It's very satisfying. Often it's more satisfying than working for money. Don't you find it? Somehow when you're working for money, there's a sense of, oh, there's something selfish in here. It doesn't have to be, but it's often like that. When you're just giving of yourself. It's such a wonderful feeling. I found that if you spend money on some big party or event for somebody and they're very happy. Even for years, you remember that. What a wonderful experience that is. This is even true materially. Now, how is this possible? How is it that we get more by giving than by taking? You can't really explain this with logic. Logically, if I spend 100 euros on something for myself, it should give me more satisfaction. It doesn't. If I buy some clothing for myself or I buy something for somebody else, when I buy for someone else, I get more pleasure seeing them wear it, even every time. Don't you find this? And even, of course, when we're so-called taking, we're really serving. We're serving our body. How much time every day do we spend serving our body? A lot. And if we think about how much time we have to spend sleeping and bathing, taking care of our clothes, and then eating. Eating is not just eating. It's what you have to do to get the food, to eat, to grow the food. If you live in a natural life, how much time you have to spend planting the seeds, watering the seeds, weeding, harvesting, preparing the food, or nowadays going to a job, earning the money, taking care of the kitchen, preparing the meals, cleaning up. It's all serving the body. Or how much we do to serve the mind. So we're always servants. Now, if you're going to do something anyway, it's intelligent to know who to serve and how to serve. If I don't have a choice about this, one thing that I frequently say to people is you have a choice about everything except two things. Two things you can't choose. We must exist. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings. You cannot stop existing. If you kill your body, you still exist. You just exist in a subtle body, and then eventually you have to get another gross body. If you merge into the Brahma Jyoti, still you exist. We can never stop to exist. And you can't say, I'm not going to serve anymore. I'm only going to take, I'm not going to give. Not possible. Not possible. Right? Somebody will say, no, I don't want to serve my wife. I don't want to serve my husband. And then they're just serving their anger and their frustration. Isn't it? But what we can choose is whom to serve and how to serve. If you have to exist, why not exist in a happy life? And if you have to serve, why not serve happy? So we're going to first look at the science of rasa. Everybody's heard of rasa. If you're in the Hare Krishna movement, you've all heard of rasa, right? So usually we talk about five rasas. Now, really, although Srila Prabhupada will use rasa in this way, really the five are just a part of rasa. Just like I could say this is my body, but really it's just my hand. It's not the whole body, just a part of the body. So we talk about the rasas. What are the rasas that we normally refer to as rasas? Actually a part of rasa. Okay, neutrality, service, friendship, parental, and conjugal. Okay. Now those really, as I say, are not completely, that by itself doesn't make rasa. That just establishes the relationship. And that part of rasa, why are we talking about rasa? Because rasa is involved with service. Whenever there's service, there's rasa. So really those five things. And then there's seven secondary. Do any of you know the seven secondary? Chivalry. Anger. Laughter. Ghastliness. Sometimes different lists are given, but also anger and lamentation. Sometimes they're given little different lists. So these are also rasas. These are also rasas. Srila Prabhupada gives the example when speaking about these rasas that when Bhishma was fighting with Krishna, and then Krishna had some wounds on his body. Now, how can Krishna have wounds and bleeding because he has no veins? But at the end of his life, Bhishma is relishing that I'm fighting with Krishna and my arrows have wounded him. Prabhupada said this is chivalry and ghastliness. And he's relishing. So this is actually part of rasa. It's called the sthai-bhav. Sthai-bhav is your... Sthai means what stays. It's the basis for everything. So before I can experience rasa, I must have some basic relationship. Exactly? I first have to know who you are. Before I can have a relationship with you, I have to know who you are. So this sthai-bhav is establishing who am I. I'm someone who has a chivalrous relationship with you, or a funny relationship, or I'm your friend, or I'm your child or your parent. Then the next is the vaibhav. So vaibhav is what causes the relationship, what stimulates it. So if I'm your friend, then one of the vaibhavs is you. Another vaibhav may be our other friends. Another part of the vaibhav called the udipan may be your behavior, your qualities. So the reason that I feel friendship towards you, or the reason I laugh when I see you, or the reason I feel afraid when I see you, is because of you, things that you're doing, or your qualities, and perhaps other people who also have a relationship with you. So there's the sthai-bhav and the vibhav. Then there's the anubhav. There's the things that I do, consciously do, I decide to do. I'm going to buy you something, I'm going to go somewhere with you, I'm going to do something with you. I'm going to express that laughter or that ghastliness or that friendship in some way. Then there's the sattvika-bhav. Sattvika-bhavs are how I feel. I feel afraid, or I feel happy, or I feel satisfied. And the sattvika-bhavs manifest themselves in some involuntary bodily action. So I decide to go for a walk with you, and as I'm going for a walk with you, that's anubhav, I feel happy, and because I feel happy, I smile. So that's the sattvika-bhav. And then there's the vichari-bhavs. The vaivichari-bhavs, those are transitory feelings. So I may feel generally happy or generally afraid, but there's also going to be other feelings that come into that from time to time, that come and go in our relationship. Just like I may generally feel happy being your friend, but if I feel that you're sick, I may feel afraid. And that those changing emotions are part of our relationship. So this rasa is the way that service is expressed, how service is manifest. It's manifest through rasa. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that there's three main kinds of rasa. One that's physical, calls this the earthly rasa. This is where we're serving our senses. The next level, Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls heavenly rasa, or swarga rasa. This is where there's a relationship of the emotions. And the third level is the spiritual rasa we have with Krishna and with Krishna's devotees. That involves Krishna and Krishna's devotees. Now, all the elements of rasa come into play on each level. So let's look at... This is an example given by Shivaram Maharaj in his book Sudha Bhakti Chintamani. And I thought it's a really nice explanation of how this tendency for service becomes twisted to the service of the senses. So he talks about if we have a sweet. So why don't we think about our favorite sweet? Everybody have a favorite sweet? Okay. So our the staibhav is our feeling of attraction to the sweet. That's the staibhav. Remember, staibhavs are things like servitude, neutrality, chivalry. That's the staibhav. We just feel attracted. We see the sweet, we hear about the sweet, we feel some attraction. The vaibhav is, first of all, the sweet itself. The sweet is the subject of the sweet, and the udipans are its qualities. It may be juicy, it may be flaky, it has a certain texture to it. Maybe it's kind of like pudding, or maybe it's kind of like cake. The different qualities that attract us, and the shelter is our own tongue. So the sweet itself, the qualities of the sweet, and our own tongue all make up the vaibhav. That's what brings out our feeling of attraction. Then the anubhav is our actions. We pick up the sweet, we put it in our mouth, and we're chewing it. We do some actions. Then the sattvikabhavs are our feelings of happiness, satisfaction, which manifests by things like we say we raise our eyebrows or we close our eyes. They're spontaneous. We don't think, now I'm going to close my eyes and say right? Just that it's a natural expression of our emotions. Whereas the anubhav is, we're deliberately, I'm going to pick up the sweet and I'm going to eat it. Then the vavichari bhavs are the transitory emotions. We may think, wow, I'm a really lucky person to get this sweet. I know some of my favorite sweets are not readily available. I don't get them very often. And I just got one of them recently in Lithuania. And as soon as I see it, I think, oh, yes, I am so fortunate. That's, never mind. Krishna knows. So that feeling. Okay, that altogether, that's rasa. Now, if we think about the rasa of on the physical platform, you'll notice that there's something about it, actually several things about it, that make it very unsatisfying. One of them is that it's not reciprocal. The sweet has no feelings towards me. The sweet is not feeling any attraction towards me. The sweet is not feeling any emotions towards me. The sweet is not making any actions towards me. It's all going in one direction only. There's no exchange. And this is one reason why whenever we try to have rasa, which is just the satisfaction of our physical body, it's very unsatisfying. I can't really have a relationship with my little book reader here, or my computer, or my car, although we may really be trying to have a relationship with our computer over here. But it doesn't work both ways. And even Srila Prabhupada talks about the difficulty between interspecies relationship. So you can feel that you love your dog, and you might think, my dog loves me, but your dog's love for you is not probably what you think it is. You know, the person, why do people keep dogs? Or we had, at one point, two ducks. We had a big garden, and there were slugs. Do you know what a slug is? It's like a snail without a shell. What do you call that? Bojlanza? And it's like a snail, but it has no shell. They're really... They eat everything. And they eat everything very quickly also. They can finish your garden, you know, one day your garden is... Especially if it's a beginning garden. Not after everything's matured, but beginning garden, finished. Like grasshoppers, all the same. So we were trying to figure out how to get rid of these slugs. And then I used to buy a lot of gardening books and magazines. And one of them said, get ducks. The ducks will eat the slugs. And they did. So we got two ducks. Of course, after they ate all the slugs, then they would step on the plants. But anyway, these ducks were very funny because it was mostly I was the one who took care of them. I made sure they got other food and water and my children a little bit. My husband didn't do anything for them. But whenever he would come home from work, they would get very excited. They could recognize the sound of his vehicle. And when he was even several blocks away, as soon as they could hear the sound of his vehicle, they would go, quack, 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 and they'd go to the gate, and they would get all excited. And he would say, the ducks give me the best reception when I come home. So that's why people like to keep pets, because they come home, and the wife just says, oh, I had such a hard day. Dinner's not even ready. And the kids go, Daddy, can we have a new airplane toy? And, right, but the dog just comes and just... So people think they get a reciprocation from the animals, but the animals are just thinking, where's my food? You're the source of my food. Right? It's not what it appears to be. So anyway, this rasa we have just with objects is very unsatisfying because there's no reciprocation. It's also unsatisfying because it's not us. It's not me. We give the example all the time. If you clean your car, sometimes you're working really hard, you're all hot and sweaty, and how nice it feels to take a bath. But you don't feel that way when you clean your car. Do you have, in Slovenia, do you have these car washers? You can sit in the car when it goes through the wash? So just imagine if you're working out in the hot sun all day, you're all dirty and sweaty, and then you sit in your car and your car goes through the car wash. It's not refreshing for you. You're still hot and sweaty. So all the times we try to have rasa by satisfying our senses, it's exactly like that. I'm not touching me. It's not me. I'm just doing something for the body, and I'm not the body. And this is why we can get so many things for the body. We can get a beautiful house, a nice car, good food, a satisfying sexual partner, nice clothes, soft bed, and you still say, that's it? And this is one reason why often when people get a lot of money and a lot of fame, they're very beautiful, is that they end up taking drugs or committing suicide. Right? So many famous people. I mean, if satisfaction of the senses, if that rasa with our senses gave us real satisfaction, then all the people in the world who had sufficient sense gratification would be happy. At least, let's say, 95% of them would be happy. Is that a fact? Are 95% of the people who have ample opportunity for this rasa with the senses, are they happy? No. Not even half, probably. And even if you have the most happiness you can get from this rasa, it's not what we're looking for. And it gets boring. If you eat your favorite sweet for breakfast, for lunch, for dinner, for breakfast, for lunch, for dinner, for breakfast. One of my best meals was at Tredas's Prabhu's house when his wife made real Italian pizza. I was in the temple. The temple president comes to me and says, Urmila, would you like to go to Krishna Loka? I said, yeah. He said, well, okay, it's just a 5-minute walk. I said, I'm moving to this temple. Tredas Prabhu's wife's name is Krishna Loka, and she made this the real thing, you know, because all over the world... Oh, you made it. All these years, I thought it was your wife, and you made it. Chai, Prabhu. I shouldn't have said anything. Now they're going to put him in the kitchen. You know, you go all over the world and everybody makes pizza, but I'll tell you, you have to really have the real thing. It was so wonderful. I wished I had a big belly as big as the tent, you know. But even that pizza, if I had it for breakfast, if I had it for lunch and dinner and breakfast and lunch and dinner and breakfast and lunch and dinner, after a while you'd say what? No more. It becomes boring. And if you keep eating it, it doesn't just become boring, it becomes what? Repulsive. You understand? Repulsive? I once read an article about this man who, when he was a teenager, he worked in an ice cream shop. And the benefit was he could have as much ice cream as he wanted. So he would just eat ice cream. And after a while, if he saw ice cream, he would vomit. And the rest of his life, he couldn't eat ice cream. He couldn't even eat sugar. We would immediately feel like he was going to vomit. So this is what happens with, we try to have this rasa on the platform of the body. There's no reciprocation. It's only going one direction. It's not me. And it gradually decreases, or sometimes quickly decreases. It very quickly decreases. The experience goes down. Goes down. Also, you feel you can't enjoy it unlimitedly even one time, right? How many pieces of pizza can you eat at one time? Then you're full. Even on that one meal, you get to the point that it just doesn't taste so good anymore, isn't it? The problem is that as long as we're trying to serve, trying to have rasa on that platform, then it is not possible to have real rasa. So Prabhupada says something very, we could say heavy. Sorry, it takes a minute. If I leave this on, the battery will automatically turn off. So I can't turn it on too much in advance. Okay, so this is at the end of text 1. Oh, I have to go. Sorry. Text 2. Okay, at the end of Prabhupada's purport to text 1 of the Upadesha Amrita, he says, for those who have decided to continue their existence in this material world for the gratification of their senses, there is no chance of becoming Krishna conscious, not by their personal endeavor, not by instruction from others, or by joint conferences. As long as we say, I want to have this rasa of serving my senses, says there's no chance. Not by our personal endeavor, not by instruction from others, and not by joint meetings. Of course, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati gives the example of the wedding party. You've all heard this example? So you're in the boat. They were going to a wedding and they had to cross the river. So in the boat and they're rowing and rowing and rowing and rowing and rowing. And in the morning, they hadn't made any progress. Why? The anchor's in there. And this anchor is serving the senses. Trying to have this rasa on the platform of the body. Now, before we look at how we're going to deal with this, I'd like to ask all of you, why? Why is it that if I'm trying to get rasa, who's serving my senses. Why does Prabhupada say there is no chance? Right? These are the ways we try to become Krishna conscious, by my own endeavor. Are we making an endeavor? Everybody here is making an endeavor to be Krishna conscious. Correct? We're picking up our beads every day. Oh, Krishna, I'm going to serve you, Krishna. We're coming to the kirtan, we're reading the books, we're doing so much service. By instruction from others, we sit in a class, we go to people, ask advice, how can I make advancement? How can I make advancement? By joint conferences, we come together, we have this yatra, we have our temples, we have our different festivals. If after doing all this, we say, I'm not satisfied with how much advancement I'm making, one possible reason could be that we're still attached to satisfying the senses, to serving the senses. Why? Why does serving the senses make it impossible to become Krishna conscious either by our own endeavor, by getting instruction, or by joint meetings? Anyone have any idea? Yes.
It's directly opposite to serving Krishna. That means if we serve our senses, it's like pouring water over the fire. We try to make yagya.
Try to make a yagya and pouring water.
Fire so you get nowhere.
Why is it opposite? Can you please tell me what about serving my senses is opposite to serving Krishna?
Because it's the consciousness of enjoyer. He's supposed to satisfy Krishna, who is the ultimate enjoyer, but when we sense satisfy our senses, we consider ourselves to be enjoyer.
We consider ourselves to be the enjoyer.
You cannot serve two enjoyers.
I cannot. Okay, but I'm going to challenge you. But I'm serving the senses. The senses say, get me something salty. And I do. The senses say, get me some nice clothes to wear. Yes, sir. I'm serving. I'm not the enjoyer. I'm the servant.
Well, you cannot serve two masters at the same time. You can serve one master.
Okay, but wait a minute. Let's go back. You said that I have the mood of the enjoyer. Please explain to me how when I'm serving my senses, I have the mood of the enjoyer. Can somebody explain? I think I am the senses. Okay.
I don't think I'm the servant.
I'm not thinking I'm the servant. I'm not understanding that I'm really a servant. So that means I'm not seeing the situation truthfully. I'm seeing the situation differently than it really is. I think, oh, my senses are serving me. I'm engaging all of my senses in my service. But the reality is I'm serving my own senses. So I'm seeing things in illusion. The word for illusion is, Sanskrit word for illusion is, maya. Maya literally means that which is not. I'm seeing something falsely. So although I still am the servant, I'm still the servant of my senses, my mood is that I'm the enjoyer. You said you can't have two masters. Well, I don't know. Prove that to me.
It's like who will be more prominent in that? Like if you have two masters, then you cannot satisfy both. You're always divided in yourself. Who would you like to serve, this one or that one? Like there cannot be two gods, but one god.
Okay, but I can have a job during the day, and then I can have my own projects, or I can work for... I can have two jobs. Some people have two jobs. I agree with you, but I want you to prove it.
You cannot be devoted, then.
You can't be fully devoted to both of them? Why not? Why can't I work two jobs and give this same energy to both of them? Why can't I spend 5 hours a day serving my senses and another 8 hours a day serving Krishna? Why not? Why can't I do that?
You cannot surrender with devotion to
Why can't I have devotion from 10 to 12 to one master and devotion from 12 to 2 to the other master? What? Why? Just because you tell me so. Why? Okay, but I still want to understand why. Oh, all. So Krishna's greedy, he wants everything. He doesn't just run from 12 to 2. That Krishna. Why? The Krishna's not going to give me any vacation for myself? He's like some employer that wants me 24/7? Why do we have to understand this, my dear friends?
Because we are not body. We are soul. Satisfaction is from soul.
Okay. I like that. So, serving the senses is something false.
Yes.
And Krishna is the supreme truth. Krishna is the absolute truth. Param satyam dhimahi. I meditate on the absolute truth. I cannot be absorbed in truth if even some of the time I'm absorbed in something false. And the more I'm absorbed in something false, the less I can be absorbed in the truth. I'm serving something that's false. It's not me. Why does Krishna want all our love?
Because he loves us more than we love him, and he wants to really turn.
Well, why can't he just take partial?
Because that's not us.
Because it's not us. Yeah, okay, he wants us to be who we are. He doesn't want us to be crazy. In madness. And in something false. Because he knows that will not make us happy. Give me any other reasons why, if I'm engaged in this sense gratification rasa, it is impossible to become Krishna conscious.
Because devotion should be unmotivated and uninterrupted. So it should be complete.
In order to satisfy us.
Satisfy.
Not just Krishna. Yadyatma supersedity. Savaipum sampro dharma yato bhaktir anokshajay. Ahoy tuki apritiyata yadyatma supersedity. That the only thing that will satisfy us is something that doesn't have any interruption. Something that doesn't have any interruption. I still want to get this two masters thing. I'm not sure that we've really covered. Are we all convinced? I mean, if we're really convinced, what would we do? We would just serve Krishna. Right? We wouldn't at all be the servants of our senses. Why can't I have two masters? I'm still not quite clear on this. Any other thoughts? There's no reciprocation. It's not even something that's nice for me. But suppose I say, okay, well, I'll just tolerate that. That's what most materialistic persons say. I'll just tolerate the fact that this rasa I'm having with my tongue and my eyes and my ears is not really what I want. Why does it really prevent us from becoming Krishna conscious? Well, that's That's okay, but why can't I have it 2 hours a day? I mean, Prabhupada's saying it's very heavy here. There's no chance, he says. Let me read this again. For those who have decided to continue their existence in this material world for the gratification of their senses, there's no chance of becoming Krishna conscious, not by personal endeavor, by instruction from others, or by joint conferences.
It keeps us in our bodily consciousness.
Okay, keeps us in, it makes a thing, I'm part of this world.
Yes, and that I'm this
body. I'm this body, that I have some separate existence from Krishna. Okay, something beyond the material world. So you can't be absorbed in the material world and be absorbed in something that's beyond the material world.
Because we have a goal in this material world. To become Krishna conscious is the goal, is yoga means the goal.
To go beyond. I mean, I really like what you said, Prabhu. What is your name?
Akura.
I really like what you said about that they're contradictory, but can you explain more why?
Like the bodily consciousness is secondary in nature. Not primary nature. Primary nature of us is the pure spirit soul, eternally related to Krishna himself. But the bodily consciousness is secondary. So if we stay on this platform, then there's no hope that we can reawaken.
Yes.
Maybe because of the qualities we develop when we serve the senses, and we just cannot compare them with the qualities that, for example, Krishna has, or devotees, so those who are on the spiritual platform. So by the consequences of serving the senses, we can see that we cannot become Krishna conscious. We just can't compare our characteristics that we acquire by serving the senses. We can't compare them to devotees, to somebody who is Krishna conscious.
I really like your answer. I think your answer brings together what other people also said. What do we become when we're the servant of the senses? What kind of people do we become? Well, first of all, we become absorbed in something false. First false thing is thinking I'm the enjoyer rather than I'm the servant. Even though I'm serving the senses, I think that I'm the center. So I become absorbed in that false thing. Then serving the senses generally makes us what?
Selfish.
Very selfish. And what else?
Lazy.
Lazy.
Greedy.
Lusty.
Angry.
Angry, definitely angry. Definitely. Frustrated, disappointed, sad, irritated. Right. Why? Because we're trying to have rasa with a piece of music or with a soft chair or with a pizza, and it's not capable of giving us rasa. It's not capable. We become angry. You're supposed to be giving me rasa. Right? And this happens also at the level of emotional rasa. The swarga rasa, where we have emotional relationships with others, and we think, why aren't you giving me spiritual rasa? And we become angry. Why aren't you fully giving me the satisfaction that I'm looking for? Now, how can we develop a relationship of real love when we're like that? You ever try to have a loving relationship with an angry, frustrated person? It's impossible. Have you tried?
Some do it regularly.
Yeah, I'm sure they try. Yeah. Yeah, if you're dealing with someone who's just, oh, I never get what I want. You can't even talk to them. Isn't it? There's nothing. There's just a wall. Now how can we relate to Krishna? We're wrapped up in this illusion. I'm just a victim. Poor me. I work so hard, I do all these things, and I still don't get what I want. That's impossible. And if that's where we are, then becoming Krishna conscious, we can't do it. No matter how much we endeavor, no matter how much we get instruction, no matter how much we come together, we can't do it. So our ultimate solution, of course, which we'll deal with more in the next 3 days, is where to get the real rasa. You can't live without rasa. Not possible. Can't. That's what we're designed for. It's who we are. The impersonalists say, okay, this serving the senses, serving the emotions, has brought us suffering. Just stop it. They say the real problem is this desire for pleasure and the desire for rasa. So just stop it. No more desires. But that's not satisfying either. Then we're just lonely and empty. What materialistic people do is they open up to try to enjoy pleasures of the body and pleasures of emotions. Then they suffer, then they close down again. No, I'm not going to eat any nice food anymore. I'm not going to have any nice relationships anymore. Then they get tired of that. Then again, they open up. And then they get hurt. And again, they close. It's called bhogatyaga. And the impersonalists say, just stop this, stop desires. So the ultimate solution is we have to have real rasa. All right. But then we have the problem. So let's say we're going to assume that everybody here in this room has already decided, yes, I want the real thing. I'm tired of the fake thing. I want the real thing. However, we've all discovered that that doesn't happen in 1 minute. Confirmed. Of course it can, but it doesn't usually. It usually takes some time. There's many reasons why it takes some time, which we can't discuss right now. Prabhupada says, as you decrease sense gratification and increased service, it's a gradual and proportionate thing. So as we're gradually decreasing our service of the senses and gradually increasing our service to Krishna, what do we do with our senses? We've been accustomed to serving our senses and our emotions for a very long time. So of course, here we go back to the right place. Oh. Machines. Sometimes they work the way you want them to, and sometimes they don't. So if we go to the beginning of that verse, I was reading the end of the purport, we go back to the beginning. Vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udara pasta vegam, etan vegam, yo vidyate dhira, sarvam abhimam, pritivim shishishat. So these are the main masters that we've had a long time, that now we want to engage in Krishna service. Just like we're very happy if we can engage people we know at work or at school or our family in Krishna service. If we can get our brothers and our non-devotee brothers and sisters and parents, if we can get our employers, if we can get someone at the government to do something for Krishna, we become very happy. So we've also had these other masters, the urge to speak, the mind, anger, the tongue, the belly, and the genitals, who've been pushing us around for a very long time. So we cannot just ignore them in the beginning. You can try. You can try. Just say, I'm just going to ignore them. It doesn't work very well, does it? They'll say, what about me? Okay. So our policy is to engage them in Krishna service. Engage them in Krishna service. And so if we think of them like that, Let me somehow or other speak about Krishna. Let me eat for Krishna. Let me be angry for Krishna. Let me use this body somehow for Krishna. But always in that mood that I am Krishna's servant. I am not the servant of this body. I mean, of course, Prabhupada goes through the list of how to do that. And the root of the senses is the mind. So how are we going to engage the mind in Krishna service? This is going to be the key. To stop serving our senses. If you look at really the essence of Krishna's teachings in the Bhagavad Gita, it's to engage the mind. And that's what we call the Krishna consciousness movement. So that means an active effort to think about Krishna. Actually to think about Krishna's name, Krishna's form, Krishna's qualities, and Krishna's pastimes. Otherwise the mind will be thinking, how can I serve the senses? And even in the name of Krishna consciousness, we'll actually be the servant of our senses and the servant of our mind. A really active effort. Let me think about Krishna, let me think about his form, let me think about his pastimes, let me think about serving him. Prabhupada said, we see the deity, we should meditate on the deity from the feet to the legs to the knees to the chest to the smiling face. And it says, what is the difficulty when you're chanting Hare Krishna to remember the deity? We can meditate on serving Krishna. Prabhupada says, even one pastime of Krishna that we meditate on, if we have a favorite pastime, how Krishna's playing in the Jamuna, or how he's killing Bakasura, or how Mother Yasoda's tying him up. Or Akura Prabhu can meditate on how Akura took Krishna away from Vrindavan. Bad, bad. When Krishna left Vrindavan, some of the residents of Vrindavan went with him, Nanda Maharaj, and sometimes Prabhupada says Yasoda also, to the gambling arena. And then they left, went back to Vrindavan. But many stayed, the young gopis, of course the animals all stayed. And then in Kurukshetra they met again. And then, you know, again it was the residents of Vrindavan who left first. Krishna and the residents of Dwarka gave him gifts, and the residents of Vrindavan went back to Vrindavan. Imagine, they didn't see Krishna for so many years, and then they finally see Krishna in Kurukshetra, and they want to bring him back. No, they left without him. And they were trying to bring him in the chariot of their mind. This is, of course, the Rath Yatra ceremony. Or Krishna dancing on the Kaliya snake. Just like we enjoy seeing some dance performance. But generally, when people are dancing, the stage is not moving. So Kaliya, the stage is moving. And not just one stage. Kaliya had 1,000 hoods. 101 were prominent. So just imagine a dancer who's dancing on 101 moving platforms. And then Kaliya is not cooperating. It's not like he's trying to make it easy for Krishna. And fire's coming out of his mouth. And he's a snake, so he's in the water, so his skin would be very slippery. And how Krishna's dancing on Kaliya, how he swallows the forest fire. And how Krishna calls the gopis to dance with him, plays his flute in the middle of the night. And each gopi thinks, the flute's only calling me. In those days, you know, in Vrindavan, there were tigers in the forest. Even in the time of the Goswamis, there were tigers. You know, there was a tiger that came to Raghunath Das Goswami, and Krishna protected him. You know that story? There were tigers. Imagine, you know, you're 13, 14-year-old girl, and you're going in the middle of the night in a forest full of tigers alone. They didn't all go together. I mean, we think we have to make a lot of sacrifice to become Krishna conscious, you know. We have to put up with our parents to join ISKCON or whatever. But will we run in the middle of the night in a forest full of tigers? And then they get there. And then what does Krishna tell them? Go home. Do you ever feel like Krishna treats you like that? He calls you. Here I am, Krishna. No, forget. Go home. So you're supposed to be chaste women. What are you doing here? Go take care of your husbands. Those how many nice pastimes Krishna has. With the wives of the brahmanas, how he tells the cowherd boys to go, and they, you know, we think if Krishna gives you an instruction, it must all work out, right? But Krishna said, go beg from the brahmanas, and they were just insulted. They came back. How has nectar become poison, my dear Lord? How is your infallible instruction? And we've just been insulted. How Krishna did this to glorify the wives of the brahmanas. How Krishna's milking the cows every morning. He sits down next to a cow. He puts a gold bucket between his knees. And as he milks the cow, he puts his head on the side of the cow and his turban moves a little. And the gopis are watching and saying, look what an expert cow milker he is. Ordinary girls, they want to, in this modern day, they want to marry a man who's an expert computer programmer. They're village girls, so they want to marry a boy who's really good at milking the cow. To see how expert he is. So this is ultimately the way to control the senses. This is ultimately the way to control the senses. If you just try to control the senses independently, my dear friends, you will fail. Not work. First of all, the senses have been our masters for a very, very long time. And second of all, we want rasa. You can't just live without rasa. It's not possible. You're not impersonalist. You can't live without happiness and without rasa. We have to be experiencing paramdrisva nivartite. And that we should start from the beginning, not just thinking, well, I have to wait until I'm a pure devotee, until I've actually decided I'm a cowherd boy or I'm a gopi or I'm a this or I'm a that, and then I can experience the full spiritual rasa. One starts. If you don't start, you know it's never going to happen. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, don't think it's going to just happen by luck. So the same endeavor that we have put in for so many lifetimes to serve our senses, at least that much work we should do to try to develop a rasa with Krishna. Then it will be easy to engage the senses in Krishna's service. Or at least easier. At least easier. It will be much easier and much faster. So one has to meditate on Krishna. And then, not just to meditate on Krishna, but one must show one's sincerity in serving Krishna by serving Krishna's devotees. And that we will discuss for the next 3 days. So I'm going to stop here at only 3 minutes after two. Look at that. See, I can do it. And we can take about 5 or 10 minutes for questions and discussions. Yes?
We're saying that, you know, when you're performing some material activities, you get saturated, like taking pizza and this and that. But I was thinking that, you know, even when we're doing spiritual activities, you know, we just don't do one thing all day, you know? Even during the day we change, you know?
Yes, that's true. Prabhupada says variety is the mother of enjoyment, even spiritually. But it's not even the... But it's interesting because spiritually, everything is eternal. And there's no... Now I'm going to turn this back on again. There's no time. So this, of course, is a very bewildering concept to the materialistically conditioned mind. Let's see how fast I can get there. Verses and quotes from the Samhita. Oh, good. Right. So at the end of Brahma Samhita, right? where there is eternal existence of transcendental time, who is ever present and without past or future, and hence is not subject to the quality of passing away even for the space of half a moment. So if everything's eternal and everything's in the present, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati and Srila Prabhupada often say that in the spiritual world everything is in the present. So everything's always happening. So although there's a variety of activities and Radharani never cooks the same thing twice, so the enjoyment is always happening. It's always in the present. It's always eternal. It's not like, oh, I finished with that, now let's do something else. It's always happening. Does that make it more confusing, or does that help?
I'm just making up. Like, you know, deities, like someone has his own personal deities, you know, he would just do this in the morning. He was not like, you know, if he would tell someone, you know, to just worship, you know, for the 5 days, you know, wouldn't he get, you know, maybe said, you know, like, let me change, let me do something else for Krishna?
How did Haridas Thakur chant 192 rounds a day? But so there is a level of realization where there's no saturation. There's still variety. So our urge for variety in this world is because there's saturation very quickly. And very quickly. The modern media take advantage of this. Modern television and movies, the images change, I think, every 10 or 20 seconds to give you an illusion of variety. So there's a genuine variety in the spiritual world, but not for the same reason. Not because of saturation. In one sense, variety here isn't really variety at all. Everything here is just goodness, passion, ignorance. If you look at, you know, from a scientific point of view, it's all just protons, neutrons, and electrons. It's a world of names only. The variety is only apparent. It's just one reason why there's saturation. So there is a transcendental variety. But it doesn't exist due to saturation. It exists due to wanting unlimited ways of expressing and love. It's quite different. So yeah, for one who's not tasting that, there's also a need to change, even in our service to Krishna. You can't just do the same thing all day. But that's due to our lack of a higher consciousness. I mean, sometimes we experience, I remember we had an 8-year-old child who joined our Gurukula. Her parents had just become devotees. She was at the end of one kirtan. She came to me and said, why did it have to end? So we feel that sometimes. Sometimes when we're dressing the deities, you know, just, you don't want to stop. You just wish you had a basket of unlimited flowers to decorate the altar with, isn't it? You sometimes feel that. Prabhupada said, that's how you know you have real quality in your chanting, when 16 rounds isn't enough, when you want to chant 16,000 rounds. When, you know, instead of thinking, okay, let me finish my round so I can do something else. It's, you know, do I have to put down my bead bag? Yeah. Anything else? Is that all right?
Right now, for example, I rather do something for Krishna than to chant, for example, but I know that's bad, but
wait, before you say anything else, honesty is always good.
Yeah.
Okay, honesty is always good. Being honest and authentic about where I am and what I like is always good. Where I am is just where I am. Okay, so before you go, that's bad. Just before you, just where I am is where I am.
No, I wanted to say that
okay.
There are processes like also not just for Kali Yuga is chanting, but this is also, I mean, if you want to do some service, for example, cooking or doing something with the deities, when you really like to do it so much.
It's funny, I've thought about, I can give you several responses to that. In Nectar Devotion, Prabhupada said we should engage in the nine processes according to our personal taste. So obviously Prabhupada's given a certain baseline of sadhana for everyone. So a certain baseline, at least so much time spent worshipping the deity, at least in the, you know, observing the deity worship, at least so much time chanting japa. Spend some time reading every day. So that's basic. But then we serve according to our personal taste. So there may be some people who that's all they want to do is have kirtan and japa. Or all they want to do is have kirtan. So they'll chant their 16 hours and they'll have kirtan all day. I know one of my god sisters has seen her recently in Mayapur. And every day she'd say, I'm going to chant my afternoon japa now. And after a while I said to her, what is this afternoon japa? And she said, well, you know, when I first became a devotee and I heard you just chant Hare Krishna, I thought, yeah, I can do that. So every year I was chanting more and more and more, and I got up to about 40 rounds, and I decided I better keep it at that, otherwise I'll never do any other service. So I chant some in the morning, some in the afternoon. So some people, even after they finish their 16 rounds, they want to keep chanting. Other people, they prefer to worship the deity. Other people, they prefer to study the shastra or work in the kitchen or do so many things. So if that's your personal taste, that's your personal taste. Although at a certain level of realization, one will understand that in chanting there's everything. That will come. That in the holy name there's everything. But guilt is not terribly helpful. It's useful for a few minutes, maybe to motivate us, but otherwise not very helpful. So even if you're saying, okay, Krishna, I'm chanting out of duty because that's what Prabhupada said to do, and but at least I like cooking for you, that's a nice place to be. Celebrate what you like. I'll also say that if you tie guilt to chanting, it'll actually make it harder to relish your chanting. Does that make sense? If we link some negative feeling to a service, then every time we think, oh, yes, that chanting, oh, yeah, I don't like chanting, but I just have to do it. You know, Iyengar had a really good policy. He worked with a lot of young devotees and gurukulis who weren't so interested in chanting japa, but they really liked kirtan. And he would tell them, you know, if you want to have a good kirtan, you got to chant japa. So you can also see your japa like that. You can say, I really love to cook for Krishna. And if I want to be the best cook for Krishna, then I have to chant nice japa. See your japa as part of your cooking. Just like if you want to have nice cooking, you want to buy the best ingredients, right? And have a clean kitchen. So I want to clean my heart. And I'll tell you something else. This might be like really radical. So if any of you don't like this, just ignore it. But in Geneva, Srila Prabhupada said, chanting Hare Krishna means you make a diamond throne in your heart. You bring Ganga and Jamuna water. You bathe Krishna. You dress him in different clothes and various ornaments. You can also do like that Brahman and cook sweet rice. Then you might really look forward to japa, because it might be a time that you can cook all sorts of things for Krishna that you can't cook in the kitchen. There's many, many places where Prabhupada gave that as an instruction for chanting. And we have that story of the Brahmana. If that doesn't suit you, then don't take it. But that instruction is there, and it's there in many, many purports and many lectures. Then you might really, really look forward to your job. Oh, in the kitchen, I can only make this and this and this because that's all the ingredients they give me. But when I'm chanting, I can make everything. Might become your favorite time of the day. So we should end now? 2:15 on schedule? Thank you very much for coming in the middle of the day as it's getting hot. Hare Krishna.